I feel like white people, especially like the right wing folk, have this deep-seated fear that if they become the minority, then what will happen to them will be what they have done to other minorities in the past. And black folk, people of color, I don't think we think we don't think like that. We don't think about actively oppressing and killing and genocide as a people.
Conquest and pillaging and fighting that all groups and tribes and peoples historically have done. It's a historical fact that on the African continent, that looked a hell of a lot different in terms of how you treated the subjugated than it did in the Americas. Like that's a fact.
See, that's a red flag. It's a red flag.
I was like, God damn, this is a shame. Like, what the fuck is going on
Is this
here?
the end?
Like, leg
Shit.
sore, thigh sore. It's like a combination of age catching up, but at the same time, I have not been doing no cardio. Luckily, I just have good genes, so I don't look crazy. But yeah, I definitely got to make some lifestyle changes.
Yeah, this nigga been leaning on that DNA crutch hard. All right, shall we get into it?
Yes, sir. It's going to be a good potty.
Welcome, everybody, to Waving the Red Flag, the number one genetic aging and dating podcast in the universe. It's your boy Eddie. It's your boy Josh. It's Alvin, back from a long journey of world domination, back to defeat the Powerpuff Girls again. How y'all doing? I want to talk about some serious shit.
Damn, straight from the jump, what you got in mind?
I was going to talk about the Buffalo mass murder. It is something that I think, is heavy in the thing.
No, that, but just these white right wing shit. Why can't I say it? White right wing folks.
It is a tongue twister.
Yeah, right. It's going crazy just simply at the thought of another race replacing them or them becoming the minority, because apparently that was like what spurred that whole ideology along.
The great replacement theory.
Yeah, right. And it's crazy because like I feel like white people, especially like the right wing folks, the extremist folks, have this deep-seated fear that if they become the minority, then what will happen to them will be what they have done to other minorities in the past. And black folk, people of color, I don't think we think we don't think like that. We don't think about actively oppressing and killing and genocide as a people like what was done to us. I don't believe so.
I mean, my thing with
We don't think, I mean, we don't intend to, but I mean, we definitely think of,
I
maybe that's problematic to say, I don't know.
It is problematic, and also historically, like so it's historically inaccurate. So like,
I said we think about it. We ain't doing it. We ain't finna actually do it. It's like when you get cut off in traffic and you're like, I'm gonna beat this nigga's ass. But you don't. You think about it though.
I think the intention, and Josh, please jump in, but I think the intention was that like we wouldn't. I think you're being like
Yes,
the
thank you.
literal,
Thank
it's like
you.
we wouldn't. And again, we have historical, like as much conquest and pillaging and fighting that all groups and tribes and peoples historically have done. It's a historical fact that on the African continent, that looked a hell of a lot different in terms of how you treated the subjugated than it did in the Americas. Like that's a fact. So like if we're
And even
going on
before the
historical
Americas.
things, yeah, like it's that's just how it is. And I think that And I think great replacement theory is kind of it's kind of flimsy, because like even if you look at like the numbers, like the white plurality is not very much in jeopardy. So black people are probably undercounted from the census because we don't participate in the census like we should, which has wide ranging implications in the states. But when you really look at voting patterns, when you really look at holding up white supremacy, the Hispanic Latino community, like quote unquote white Latinos, vote right, and they're trending even more right. So like. Like
It's crazy.
as a white Cuban, what they think of themselves.
Oh yeah,
As
absolutely.
them if they think they're a person of color when it's not
Brown
convenient. Like
person,
they'll probably if they'll probably trend towards whiteness, and
and
they'll
they definitely
definitely
vote
vote white.
Republican.
Yeah, so it's like the Great Replacement Theory is just like it's a bunch of shit that like you get like young impressionable minds to buy into and like all this kind of bullshit, but.
Did y'all see that that quote that's a clip from B. Simone's podcast about Martin Luther King and how he wasn't fuck it, I misparaphrase her, but that he wasn't a great man because he wasn't a great husband. essentially.
So I try to stay as far away from B. Simone as possible. So.
Is she trash?
Yeah.
Okay. I know precious little about her. So please
tell us why.
I don't want to give B. Simone like airtime, but like basically she's a crook. She's selling people like these like self-help books that are basically just like magazines that like she like went and printed at Kinko's and she's charging like top dollar for them. And it's like on some Brian Griffin, wish it, want it, do it type shit. Like with like blank pages and shit and like stolen materials.
Stolen materials.
From other
one thing,
black creatives too.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Yes. And I mean like these are alleged accusations, but they're still.
It was pretty compelling evidence for some of this shit, man. Okay, I remember when they first dropped, like, they were like whole ass like fucking threads. Like, yeah, man, she fucking stole my shit. But
okay. But is vapid, empty, unhelpful self-help bullshit to make money? Like, how bad is that really? Like, if you're making your money, I don't think that's that evil, really.
So the thing that really, the hypocrisy in that for me and the thing that really rubbed me the wrong way in what she said was, for one, if you're devaluing an entire legacy of the one, Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
And then you...
True.
Got the nerve to say that he was not great at shit, just relegating it to one aspect of his life. And no one's perfect. I'm not sitting here like on the soapbox saying cheating on your wife is cool. That's not saying that, oh, that doesn't matter, but no. But if you're going to devalue an entire legacy of someone who affected positively millions of black and brown people worldwide.
And white people.
And white people.
Mm-hmm.
But you... you will die never accomplishing nothing on that fucking magnitude. So what does that say about you and the rest of us? And then that he's not great, but you're also stole from other black creatives to further your own personal gains. It's like that's the hypocrisy in it for me.
Yeah. I mean, we can go deep into it. For MLK like that. I mean, I think also it's one of those, it's given unnecessary gender wars bullshit, dividing black men against black women shit. So I'm almost a little bit hesitant to be like, how, because you know what I'm saying, like it's a lot of like, see, look what these modern women are doing, they saying MLK wasn't good just because he cheated on his wife, like kind of stuff. There's that flavor to it.
Absolutely.
And I just maybe want to give a little bit of leeway and be like, maybe what they meant to say was that he wasn't a good person. Because when I think of the word great versus good, I think of they're describing two different things. They're not even on the same comparative spectrum. When I think of great, I think of noteworthy and accomplishing incredible world-changing things, usually for the positive. When I think of good, I think of moral in your own personal life, a good father, a good friend, a good brother. But when you're talking about great, you're a great scientist, a great leader, a great speaker, a great politician, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to say Martin Luther King was not a good person because he wasn't a good husband, I'm a little bit more open to that. If you're saying that just because he cheated, that takes away from the fact that he was a good father and was an incredibly impactful and important leader, then I don't know. I guess Nick is not the only one saying dumb shit on a podcast now.
I think it's one of those things where, like, even with that, you remember, like, when we had the conversation about ridicule versus shaming, and we talked about what the Venn diagram was for that. I think that this is a similar conversation where we're talking about good versus great. I think this may be one of those things where, like, I was the only person that saw the difference between shaming and ridicule. I think you might be the only person that sees the difference between a good and a great person. But just to get into, like, the nitty-gritty of it specifically, I mean... There are very, very, very few things in the grand scope of everything that a person can do that I would 100% completely say that you're like a 100% a bad person / not a great person because you did that. And like that just doesn't qualify for me. That can be a mistake. That can be something that just happens. Like, I'm not devaluing somebody's entire life or legacy as a good person or a great person. Either way, we want to slice that Venn diagram just because of that. But that's me.
Man
personally.
Or woman, by the way.
I understand if people do it, but like, I'm not.
I don't know that everybody gets to be good. Like, it's like the difference between saying like, oh, I don't really like them, and like, I dislike them. The implication when you say you don't like somebody is that you dislike them. I feel like you can say like, oh no, he wasn't like like good requires active good. You don't get the label of just good person because you exist and we're all imperfect and blah, blah, blah. And you've done some good things and you, you know, gave a homeless man a banana one time and now you're good. It's like, well, no, most people probably aren't good, great people. Some of us are, some of us aren't. Very few of us are like bad people. If you go, look, y'all are saying he's like this good, great guy. Like, no, he's a cheater. Okay. You know, he's imperfect like the rest of us to just in addressing what you were saying. Yeah. But I think, you know,
yeah, I mean,
saying somebody's not good is very different than saying they're bad.
Yeah. But I also, I mean, like it's a philosophical debate, right? Like some people, like there are thinkers that literally say like, we're all born good people.
Oh yeah. I disagree with that. I don't even know what the fuck that means.
That's a philosophical argument in itself. Like, what does that mean? But like literally explicitly, like philosophers have said it. I'm thinking,
I agree. I understand it.
I actually don't believe
so,
in that.
So like what happens in your life, you have this effectively this ledger and like society assigns different values to what goes in your good and bad ledger. And like you're ultimately a good or bad person based on how much stuff you had in your good column of the ledger and how much stuff you had in your bad column of the ledger.
That naughty and that nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like I think that there are within that spectrum, within that scale, there's stuff that in that bad column just 100% weighs you down. So if you're fucking R. Kelly, like there's nothing good that R. Kelly can do to redeem himself in my eyes. Just saying. I think that if I'm putting this in MLK's bad ledger, I think I'm still way heavy on the good side in regards to
No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
So I'm still calling him a good person.
No, well, I agree. See,
but
I
that,
agree.
They
ain't
were
even that bad. Like,
real quick, just to bring it back to actually the actual what she said was great versus good. Mm. So I think in giving her an olive branch, I think we all agree he's good, but great. So that does introduce some different caveats in this conversation. And she kind of veered off from MLK when she made that first statement. And just to, in general, like if you commit infidelity on your wife, you're not a great businessman, you're not a great father, you're not a good father, and you're not da 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 da. And treating these things like they're synonymous when they're not.
But I disagree with that. I don't because
okay
because Let's quite go. Frankly quite frankly like if you're married, right, if you're married and you're supposed to be a good businessman as well, being a poor husband is a bad business decision.
Good business 100% poor business decisions all the time.
And that makes them bad businessmen.
It's like the ledger that you put forward before. It's like there's a percentage of things. If you go, look, I'm a zillion good and I did this one. You can say that's a bad business decision, but to say a single bad business decision completely.
Let me ask you this. And again, I don't know international law. And I do know that like this only applies to like 12 states. But let's say you're in a no contest state. And you just put your business in a decision where you're going to lose half. That's bad business. Like, it's not a lot of shit that you can do from a business perspective where you're automatically going to lose half. Or let's say you're in a state.
That's like saying getting married makes you a bad businessman, which I'd be willing to hear that.
I disagree because I think that marriage is similar to a business partnership. Like, every business partnership, even though you have liability on that standpoint, isn't a bad business move if it creates dividends. Like if it brings value to the business, and I think your marriage should bring value to your metaphorical business. But
you just said if you're
doing that badly,
no contest, which means that the likelihood of that fucking up your business is probably higher than it helping your business.
First of all, like you can break
most
that down, right? No, they don't. The marriage rate has fallen drastically.
You're right.
Most marriages
a lot
succeed,
of them do though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of them do, but like. It's currently in the States, the last figure I saw was about 30% because people are being more discerning about who they marry, which is literally the point I'm making. So if you have a good partnership, then the dividends can outweigh the risk. But if you are, as a husband, like being a bad partner, how good of a businessman are you? Because that's a bad business decision at that point. I would hear arguments on the other side, but I'm just saying I see that point a lot more than the MLK point.
And thank you for making that distinction, too, because I totally understand what you're saying, because marriage is a business at the end of the day. So if you are being unfaithful to your wife, if you're causing great ripples in your own marriage, then, of course, that's going to affect a lot of different things.
Including your kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because like there are going to be arguments, all sorts of things that your kids, that's going to fuck up your kids. And like they don't want to. We all know how that go. But just going back to the offboarding of this conversation was with B. Simone, and like when she was saying that you're not a great businessman, like speaking from someone who was in a position working at a corporation or an entrepreneur or a person of power, in power, those two things are not synonymous. Like two things can be true at the same time. And that's the only thing that I took issue with, was that she made all of that shit synonymous. Because when you're in, like, say, for instance, if a man, he's doing his thing at the company, $1 million, quarter over quarter, the company is growing, like AB was saying in the pre-show. They don't give a fuck what you're doing at home. To everybody and to them, to the company, you're a great businessman. They don't give a fuck about the conversation you had when you go home around dinner. They don't care. Other than just, you know, 5 minute small talk, you know, just to, oh, hey, how you doing? Like that type of conversation. Like, so that's kind of where those two things are not synonymous. Two things can be true at the same time. Once again, not sitting up here on a soapbox and saying it's cool to be a terrible partner or shitty partner on your spouse.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I agree. If you want to say being a bad husband or being a cheater is a bad business decision, then okay, that's fine. But to say that making a single bad business decision by definition means that you can't be a good or great business person, mm-hmm. just makes no sense. You could say that about any business decision that you might make. You know what I mean? Stealing from the company doesn't make you a good businessman because it might get you arrested and da 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 da. It's a lot of motherfuckers who stole from their company who are objectively good businessmen. They have succeeded. They did a good job at that. And that's the only real definition that matters. So yeah, it takes away from your ledger. But if your ledger is still way in the positive, you're still good. There's no argument there.
But I think for me, and I was very explicit.
Can it make you bad? Yes. Does it?
Yeah. With my analogy of the ledger, I was very explicit that I think there are weights to your entries in the ledger. It's not a numbers game. So for example, if R. Kelly went and saved 500 people right now, he is still a fucking horrible person. That's what I'm saying. He could go and save 500 people right now. That doesn't take away from all the lives that he ruined. Bill Cosby can go and save 500 people right now. I'm still looking at this list.
I agree with the weighting. What's that got to do with
what I'm saying is, from a business perspective, and I think Josh's argument is the one that I mostly agree with. Like, I think Josh has hit it on the head, but addressing specifically like what you just said about the ledger, if I've been a good businessman and I'm making millions after millions after millions after millions after millions, all of that goes to me, and then I make a poor business decision that costs me 50% of that, it don't matter what I just did, because even if I'm making millions and millions and millions, I just gave somebody half.
Only if that result ends up happening. So you're saying that because you cheat, you definitely will do that. That's not true. If you've got a prenup in place, if you don't get caught, if your partner stays with you, all of which are likely possibilities, and you so you're not a good business person if you fumble the bag and fuck it all up. True, but that's not the same thing as cheating or being a bad partner. It's a lot of people
as the person with the business training here. So if you're a business person and you're in corporate America and you're making millions and millions and millions over here, they're going to do something that's called a risk assessment for you, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how many millions that you've made in the past, if you're a liability to lose 50% of a profit, mm-hmm. you're too big of a liability. I can no longer insure you internally or externally. I can no longer reinsure you. Okay. Like that's literally how that happens from a pure business perspective. If we're going to take the analogy of the ledger to its full like fruition, which is what could happen, not what has happened. So from a risk perspective, you're too big of a risk at that point. 50% as a risk is unacceptable. No business is going to take that.
Man, Bill Gates was fucking on his wife. You're not going to tell me Bill Gates not a good businessman. He managed it.
Yeah, no, I don't.
What are we talking about? Like, yes, those risk assessments and all that stuff happens.
You could argue that Bill Gates wasn't a good businessman. Bill Gates was the mind. So like, it's a difference between like the mind and the businessman. So it's like Jobs and Wozniak, right?
Yeah. I was just about to say that.
Yeah, Wozniak was the mind. Jobs was the businessman. Bill Gates was the mind. Paul Allen was the businessman. Ballmer was the businessman, even though like he was horrible at it.
I still don't think you can say that he wasn't a good businessman. You could say he wasn't the greatest at his own company.
Brilliant man.
And I think he's a good businessman. He might not have been
he's one of the most brilliant people to ever walk the planet.
And a good businessman. He might not have been the best businessman in his company, or the businessman in his company. But
I can give you countless, according to what metric? I can give you countless examples of how bad of a businessman Bill Gates was and how Paul Allen,
lots of people have fucked up. Lots of people who were good. Steve Jobs made bad decisions and also made good ones. And in the end,
but again, the ledger, the weight, right? So Steve Jobs created what was the foundation of the most profitable company in the history of companies. Okay. He did that as a businessman. If Bill Gates is 100% in charge of the business decisions of Microsoft, Microsoft isn't the second or third most profitable company in the history of companies, depending on the day. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, he needed guidance. And I'm not saying that means he's a horrible person. I'm just saying that specifically from a bit. We're also getting way off topic now. But
yeah, we're getting a little let's bring
it back to what this really was about. But I'm just saying, like, Bill Gates fumbled many a business bag and was bailed out by the actual business minds.
And that's
fair enough.
If
we could bring it back to the husband and partner thing, the reason I'm arguing it so much is because I feel like it's the same thing, which is that I don't get this argument of saying if you're bad in one domain that happens to cross over into another, it by definition means you are now bad in this other domain. Makes no sense to me. If you are an alcoholic and a mathematician, yes, the alcohol affects your mind. It doesn't mean that you are by definition a bad mathematician. If your wife is a great mother and she fucks another nigga, yes, that probably is going to impact her motherhood. It's probably going to have some negative impact. Da, 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 da. It doesn't by definition mean she's now a terrible mother and she's doing a worse job. She can still very much be a good mother, even though she cheated on you, even though she did you dirty. Like,
and be this a one-to-one partner. Does not make They're sense. They're not synonymous. Yeah. They're not synonymous. Like, yes, absolutely. And that's the main issue that I took with that whole argument between both of them, because there was two people talking, like her and the other girl. Yeah. I don't know her name, but that was the main issue. And going back to what you said, because I kind of didn't think about it like that, that this was just kind of like more clickbait and more fodder for this, like, black man versus black women, just to, you know, make the gap even wider between us. And as a nigga who has historically never cheated on nobody, I can understand why somebody might cheat. And I'm actually fearful in the future for my own future. Like, what if, like, a switch get turns on and I want a variety of women, which I think is it's kind of like one of those differences between, like, men and women, testosterone versus the estrogen. I don't, you know, it's a whole minutia that goes into that.
That's a myth,
that.
But I thought so. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but, like,
there was a study coming out that the cheating gap is basically closed for people in our age range, that men and women are cheating at basically the same rates now.
Yeah. I don't
know if that's comforting or scary.
That is both, because the comforting side is that women shut up because y'all are doing the same shit. But the scary shit is like, oh my God, like,
y'all are doing the same shit.
I could find the love of my life too. And yeah, Jesus, even if I am a good man and this is supposed to be the reward, oh, you're a good man, but you get a good woman. Like, it's scary. It's scary as fuck, because nobody wants to get their heart broken at the end of the day, no matter what that looks like. I just feel like, that whole thing with that B. Simone said or whatever was very hypocritical, and also increased the gap of understanding coming together, and just kind of fed into, like, the Kevin Samuels Manosphere with the Womanosphere version of that.
Definitely had,
you know,
those.
What I mean? I don't know.
I don't know if I blame her, but what you think, Alvin?
I think it's
definitely fodder.
I definitely think it's fodder. I don't put it in the same inflammatory nature as a Kevin Samuels or Fresh and Fit. I think it's,
she ain't have to say,
I think
Martin
it's levels.
I think it's levels.
I think
Martin
Luther
King in
there
was
shit,
wild.
Throwing Martin Luther King in there was wild, and, like, I ultimately think that Josh is right, but, like, I just think that it's levels to this shit, man. I think in the realm of fodder, that was like a 4.5 out of 10. You look at, like, Kevin Samuels, Fresh and Fit, these niggas is like 11 out of 10. I think it's different.
I think it's in the same ballpark. I definitely think it's in the same ballpark. It's not to the level, because, I mean, we're comparing a single clip to a large body of work. But I think if you compare this clip to any one of the many viral clips that Kevin Samuels, Fresh and Fit, Roommates, et cetera, have, I think it's pretty similar. When you take into account that they picked Martin Luther King for that example, I think it's unnecessarily divisive, because you're going to have a lot of people who are on the fence, who weren't necessarily, you know, on the Fresh and Fit style of thinking, being like, damn, these modern women are now insulting Martin Luther King just because he's cheating. And then you've got people on the other side who are going, damn, see, men really want to defend cheating. Like,
but it's fair.
Why would you pick such a divisive hill to die on?
Dude, that's what it devolves into, like, when you get into the comment section.
Be fair, like, there have been countless books written by scholars and in academia about MLK's cheating.
Yeah.
Like, just like there have been, like, countless scholars about MLK's, like, Malcolm X's, like, sexual history, and, like, the fact that a lot of people think that he was lying about all of his autobiography and all this shit, like Walter Dean Myers and all this kind of shit. So, like, I think that this is a little bit more on the up and up, because this is effectively, like, maybe not the way she said it, because knowing B. Simone, I'm pretty sure that the way she said it wouldn't on some academic.
Have you
scholarly
seen the clip?
No, I haven't, and I'm not going to watch it.
you probably are going to, like, unintentionally.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
It's a little trigger. It's just a little.
This is already probably out of the Twitter sphere, and like I haven't seen it on my TL, right. so I'm probably done. But the fact that this was a conversation that like scholars were having, Pulitzer Prize winning like things, like so, I think that gives a little bit different than.
I think you're pulling from like your heavy academic understanding of it, and
no. But what
points out that Martin Luther King was a cheater, and that you know sullies his legacy.
People make questions about his legacy based on that. Again, in Pulitzer Prize winning books,
and I would say that's an issue too. This is just happens. I agree,
but again, what I'm saying is like we're having a conversation about something that's like high level discourse. Whether or not you want to say that's biased based on this same argument, I get it. Versus Kevin Samuels saying like fat women can't get no man time. Like, you know, I'm just saying that's like different to me. That's different.
People have written books saying the same shit as Kevin Samuels at high levels. They have manifestos. They got plenty of books out there that are doing the same shit.
I want you. I know you can't do it right now. I want you to find one. I want you to find one Pulitzer Prize winning book.
Pulitzer Prize. By that,
or any prestigious respected author that wrote a book that said that fat women can't get a man like Kevin. Kevin Samuels said and sent it to me.
I was definitely gonna say
Jordan Peterson is not respected.
So now respected is the see.
I literally said respected. Like, play the tape, Eddie.
You did. I'm not saying you didn't say respected. I literally said the word you fucking said.
Now we saying respected. Like I always said respected, nigga. Like
yeah, I'm okay, nigga. What are we even arguing about? I'm saying okay. If we're saying respected, I take issue with you adding with that having been added. Shit, Jesus Christ. That seems like a very weird qualifier to put on it to me.
So here's my point. My point is that it's fodder regardless. I don't think that it's a good topic. I think that she was wrong for bringing it up. I think that it's ridiculous. I think that she shouldn't have done it. All I'm saying is that I think that it's a little bit different to have something that's like been a discussion since it was discovered by everybody that's an MLK scholar versus Kevin Samuels saying that if you're 35 and you fat, that like you can't get a man. I think those are two different playing fields. Both are wrong, but I think they're different.
We're also talking about a famous person. Like we're talking about MLK. So that's the other issue here. Like you're going to have Pulitzer Prize winning shit being spoken about the guy, regardless of how wild the take is, if somebody writes a big ass book about it. So fat women over the age of 35, you're not going to find many books that are Pulitzer Prize winning that are about that topic any fucking way. It's not a good comparison, I'd say. Are you going to find people who are talking about like, are you going to find books that are talking about red pill nonsense or that are adjacent to that? Absolutely.
Jordan Peterson
is probably at the top of that list because he's the closest one to like not being insane. But you know, I don't know whoever else those guys draw from. I don't know who the main people are.
They just say shit like Malcolm Gladwell, and they say I have a PhD.
Hey, Malcolm Gladwell.
I like Malcolm Gladwell. I'm actually mad I said his name right there.
That's his Jamaican brother right there. Goddamn.
He's what every anthropologist wants to be, man. So like you know.
Yeah. But he just said shit, though.
Yeah, Malcolm Gladwell would be in that list probably then of similar topics.
I would like to introduce a caveat to the conversation when it comes to cheating. Mm-hmm. And in the vein of something I've been thinking about for a little while, what do y'all think about just the theory that I have personally that men desire a variety of women versus how women have the desire for a variety of material things and how that relates to cheating or infidelity, even though there's also like the other little caveat of where actually niggas is happening at the same rate. But in terms of a man's desire in a relationship and being ready to be in a monogamous relationship, how do y'all think that actually factors, or like, do you think there's some validity in that?
No fucking clue.
I will say that lifelong monogamous pair bonding on this planet is very rare.
It's hard.
Like there are very few species that do that. However, for the species that do it, it makes sense from a reproductive like trajectory perspective. So like if you're like monogamously lifelong pair bonded, so the whole thing is about passing on your like genetic material, right? That's what it is. So like there's one facet of that, which is as a man who doesn't have a long, you know, gestation period like mammalian women like do, well, mammalian females, not women. you would be more inclined to just like shoot up the club as much as you possibly can, right? However, if all men are doing that, then y'all can't guarantee that them is your kids, right? You have little idea of like whether or not like your genetic material is the one that won and got to the egg first, because everybody's doing that shit. But if you pair bond, you're more likely to know that that kid is yours, and you're passing along like your genes and increasing your reproductive success is the argument. Mm-hmm. Now, from a societal standpoint, I think that there's something to like accessibility and all that kind of stuff, but yeah. I think it gets complicated, like based on like what anthropology says about like these pair bonding trends and like what we're supposed to be doing and like what society tells us is like available to us. I think it gets dicey.
On top of that, because I definitely understand where you're coming from wholeheartedly. It just feels like men have an innate desire for a variety of women, and women have an innate desire for a variety of different materialistic things, or just things, whether that be clothes, food, you know, stuff like that. And now, whether that man chooses to act on the baseline desire of different women, because that could show itself in all sorts of different shapes and forms, whether that just be looking at women and not touching, not commenting, but just looking and appreciating a different woman that's different from your lifelong partner, or if that actually goes beyond the path of the willpower in a monogamous relationship and he chooses to act on those desires. And on top of that, we also have a lot of different people who participate in polyamory. And there's also a lot of books that are written that don't necessarily advocate for monogamy. And it says like monogamy might not be the most logical or sensical thing for human beings, because like no matter man or woman, if you are with the same person and they're not fulfilling certain needs, it's not like your needs just disappear or your wants disappear. But if you're in a monogamous relationship and they're not fulfilling all your needs, naturally, it's human nature that you might start looking for something else, or you might be more enticed to look for something else. And I've even had a conversation with a woman a couple weeks ago where she was like, look, if we've been married for 20 years and we deep in it, I get it. I probably would be more on the path of, hey, well, let's give each other a hall pass, or let's experiment, but we need to communicate with each other. We need to introduce some new things that we're both comfortable with so that you can get your rocks off and I can get my rocks off. We need variety versus just us. But with monogamy in and of itself and the ideology behind monogamy, one person, the same person for the rest of your life all the time, regardless of where their mindset is. And that piece where your mindset is says a lot.
Do you think that, because it seems like in that framework that women are also seeking the same kind of variety that you imply men tend to seek. Is that the idea?
I think men naturally seek more variety between of women. Mm-hmm. And that could be body type, thought in a woman, like, you know what I'm saying? Just there's all sorts of nuances that men like in different women.
Yeah.
But ultimately, women also do like a variety of dicks too, or different chemistry, or different ways that they're being spoken to. Like, so I guess ultimately, like, it does boil down to a variety, but I think men have more of a bias towards the variety of the opposite sex, or, you know, the same sex, because, you know, everybody ain't straight, versus more so than a cis hetero woman versus a cis hetero man. And that could also be included in all the colors of the rainbow too. I don't know.
You can paint with all the colors of the wind.
I think it's a good discussion. I think it's a larger discussion about how many people would be open to the idea of a quote unquote non-traditional partnership if that were less socially stigmatized. And I think that that's a phenomenal conversation. I don't have any numbers or anything to say one way or the other, but I think that like I would very much venture to say that it would be much more popular amongst men and women if it were less social stigma around it.
Yeah.
And I think the reverse is like if you're a person that does desire that, it just makes your relationships more work, because you're not only constantly, if you're good at it, you're trying to give your partner some stuff that they need, but sometimes you can't. And then it becomes a thing about you both are working to overcome the fact that you're not being fulfilled. Like if that's like a psychological thing in and of itself.
I'd be very curious to see what the long-term outcomes are for those polyamorous relationships, because I definitely have come way more around to the idea of monogamy. And I think that we have this conversation about like, oh, we get bored, and I'm kind of like, yes, yeah, so
I don't, man, for I really don't. So like so the thing for me is like when I think about long-term pair bonding, right?
Yeah,
I'm thinking about things that like I ultimately see that. And that's not even something that happens overnight. You know what I mean? That's not even something that if I'm dividing attention that I think is even like that simple to get. So I'm really thinking like I want that one singular focus to grow and like build with, because like the level of comfort that I seek and the level of like I want you to know my ins and outs. I want to know your ins and outs. I want to grow together. I want to figure that shit out. I feel like that takes a substantial fucking amount of time. Like, and I'm just thinking about like dividing that amongst multiples, like even with like work and like lifestyle and all that kind of shit. I don't know if that's for me. So I'm not saying that like it's null and void because of my personal situation. I'm just speaking on like my personal thing.
Maybe I said it backwards or you misheard me. I was saying, I meant to say I'm more inclined to understand monogamy as being superior to polyamory.
No, and then you talked about like, then you went on to make a point about how some people see XYZ in like polyamory, and I was saying I don't see that. I was adding an addendum to the point that I don't see the benefit of polyamory in my life either. Even though I understand like as like societally, I think that again, like a lot of people would be on board, and I think it would do a lot of people some good. Just not.
I don't know if it would. I think a lot of people go with the monogamy because they assume that that's what you're supposed to do, and they don't analyze the benefits. But I think also people look at polyamory and go, that looks like some new age magical. That's the answer to all of my woes type shit. But I think even if you do it ethically and you have all the conversations and you do the come down and you have your, you know, your security blanket for when your partner is having an overnight date and you have all of that stuff. For me, the benefit is building a relationship for 20 years, 30 years that isn't threatened by the possibility of a strong, intimate relationship with another person. I think for some people it might work, but I really wonder if you can within polyamory build something that's going to last 50 years. To be fair, most people don't do it with monogamy either, though.
Oh, exactly. So, and this is the same homegirl that I referenced a moment ago, but she also introduced like another caveat that I never even thought about before. It wasn't like a sexual thing, but it was like an emotional bonding thing and building a village of different individuals. And they all contribute something, and and vice versa. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's contributing something to them. They're contributing something to her. It's like she looked at it as more of a village. It's not like a sexual. Mm-hmm. That person was not thinking about it like, oh, I need to get fucked differently. It was just like, no, I need these different emotional, mental, physical needs met. And that takes a village in a sense. So that was kind of where she was coming from with the mind frame of polyamory. But, and real quick, because I know you got something to say, I know it's going to be good, but I just want to end with, I'm still more aligned with the concept of monogamy. However, I would want to, I guess the best that I can say right now is that I would want to have my ride or die. And we can also reach a conclusion that we can come together with, say, hey, if we're not fulfilling each other's needs right now, or just, you know, we can do a little bit of swinging, like we can introduce some other people just in terms of sexually or something like that. I don't know, but that's just kind of where I might be.
So my thing was, so one, I want to reiterate that I think that works. I think that works for a swath of the population. Like, I think me and Eddie, rare moment here, I think me and Eddie are like very much aligned on that, other than the fact that I think that it can be a very healthy relationship for a larger percent of the population than are currently engaging in it. But my question for you, Josh, specifically with the homegirl that you're referencing, is what are her friendships like? Because if it's not a sexual thing, I feel like, and I feel like this is something that's a larger issue with a lot of relationships too, that a lot of people get in relationships and stop cultivating those platonic friendships that can be some of that other stuff that you're getting from a village perspective. So like, I still have very good friends and have maintained that. And, you know, I would encourage everybody in relationships to do the same, so that like you can rely on that network as well. And it seems like that's something that a person who's not looking for a sexual situation, but more so like a village to cultivate, to get those like more intrinsic desires, can just get that by cultivating good, strong, solid platonic friendships.
Friendships. Yeah. And just in reference to the homegirl, she was actually initially against the idea of polyamory, but she met someone who was actively participating in polyamory who turned her on to a new idea or a new perspective of it, and then she passed down this information to me. So she was kind of like in the mind frame of understanding it a little bit more and expanding her view. Gotcha. So I'm not sure, but no one heard, like, she's, I mean, the girl I'm talking about specifically that I know, she's very much so like a free spirited, you know, mm-hmm. fucking, we might frolicking. Goddamn, you know, stop on the side of the road and go and frolic in some flowers, you know, that type of person.
Mushrooms.
Yeah. You know? And so, and, you know, even her, like, she's more aligned with monogamy, but kind of going back to what I was saying, like, well, hey, I get it. We've been together for 20 years. You know, we might owe each other a hall pass or two. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't mm-hmm. know.
I don't know. The hall pass thing to me is a little bit, but something that you said and what Alvin was saying about the idea of community, I'm like, you know what? That makes a lot more sense because I think of monogamy and the romance of it in a very practical perspective, which is that, like, you're just hedging your bets on this emotional bond by cutting off the other things and energy that might take away from it, as opposed to any sort of magical one true love type shit. But when you painted that picture of, like, a community and a village and all that kind of stuff, I was like, my perspective on monogamy is kind of built on the idea that your romantic partner is likely going to be a person that you're going to build your life with. But if you're taking a much more community oriented perspective to how you build your life, and it's like, okay, cool. I'm 85. There was a woman that I spent like 20 years of my life with, and we're still friends, but we're not together anymore. And I'm dating this other 85-year-old woman. And when I go to pass away, like three of my lovers and like four of my homeboys are going to be there. And I'm a part of this larger community. And I, even though I'm not bonded specifically with the same person that I have been for 20 years, that person is still in my life. And I still feel like I have deep, deep connections with other people. That then starts to look a lot more reasonable and a lot less scary.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if you have a polyamorous relationship in the context of a community centered lifestyle, well, then a lot of the things that I said start to kind of fall apart. What's up?
Yeah, I said that with a little bit of fucking going on.
With a little bit of fucking going on.
With a little bit of fucking, you know, a little bit cross of mingling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some poly smashing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get that gives it a little bit more creep. For me, the appeal of monogamy is very much a practical one. So I can see that. There was something that you said earlier that I wasn't really sure about, which was like, okay, so you said you think men seek variety, and I said I don't know about the whole thing. I think I agree with that. Like my gut reaction, my personal experience, my experience of other men makes me say, yeah, I think that's true. Alvin has implied that women are similar or closer than we think. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know how much of this is socialization, but then you said the material thing, and that part, I don't know if I could. I didn't. That's not been my experience. I don't directly see that. So I had to just say, I don't know. If there's information, like if there's data that says that, then I defer to that. But that,
what was the material?
That didn't click for me as a true thing.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a book called The Way of the Superior Man by David Deida. Mm-hmm. And it's not on no goddamn patriarchal and
I've heard of this book before, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's a great book. I recommend many of men and women read that book. And it's not on no misogynistic shit whatsoever, but like it's truly uplifting men and getting in touch with your emotions, your feelings, and understanding yourself and how to communicate with women and understand women. That's really what the basis of the book is about. But there was a section in the book that talked about some of the key differences between men and women, I guess, in a cis hetero relationship. And he was describing that men and women kind of differ on like a certain level of, and that's kind of what we desire. Like women have a craving for variety, and that kind of like, and I'm, you know, paraphrasing, but that led into more materialistic values. They have a variety for color, for different color palettes to do something different on a day-to-day basis. They don't want to be stuck in a constant minutia of doing the same shit week over week. Whereas a man, we can do that shit and be comfortable because we're comfortable in that. We know what's coming. We can manage that and be a provider. We can do that. That's no problem for us a lot of the times. But a woman wouldn't lose her fucking mind if she didn't have no variety in that aspect. But what I was saying was that men might have more of a propensity for variety in women. Or appreciating women. And that doesn't mean you're going to be cheating, but yeah.
I don't know. I feel like when we start talking in these like generalizations and like these, and I'm not saying this necessarily isn't the case or any of that, but like, I feel like a lot of the gender stuff that we talk about on like certain podcasts, certain books, it's like men do this thing and then women do whatever the like grammatical opposite of it is. And sometimes I'm like, ah, I don't know that that it's like we're trying to create parallels because we assume that men and women are these like chiral twin. Yeah, twin pair kind of thing. So it's like, oh, if men like variety of women, then what's the variety word that women like? I'm like, if women are get bored and like variety, and I think this, I think there is data to support this, women tend to get bored with their partners more quickly than men do. So like as much variety as we say men like, women, I think, Alvin, correct me if you know otherwise, they're more likely to get bored with a particular dick.
And that's because their man is not providing variety in the areas that they want. Such as going on different dates, such as introducing them to new things, such as stimulating their minds in different areas.
Interesting.
That's
interesting.
The variety that I was, yes, like that's the variety that that the author was discussing. Once again, I would highly recommend everybody read that book, "The Way of the Superior Man" by David Dido.
So I'm definitely going to check it out because it very much seems Malcolm Gladwell, and as I've stated, big Malcolm Gladwell fan. He'd be talking out of his ass, but I'd be liking it. But my thing with stuff like that is that
kind of pop sociology. He seemed like he kind of like he starts.
Malcolm Gladwell
like
be making, shit up, bro. And he be making shit up, and it just sounds so good that we all just go with it. And like again, like you know, anthropology,
no Malcolm Gladwell slander over here.
Like no, this motherfucker was saying shit. We was all saying some shit,
and like, then fill in like two or three little studies. Like the thing that he's like his idea was. Was real.
Like he'll fill in a study and it'll be like 1 + 1 = 2. This study says that 2 is XYZ, so therefore that means that 1 + 1, like he be backing into shit like all kind of like creative licensing kind of way. But
it seems very sometimes it's good, but he'll be like, you know, hey, look, people like different things, and the best way to think about that is in bins. For instance, there was this spaghetti study one time, and it's like, oh, I mean, I guess, but like
I'd be fucking with it
anything,
though. So,
you know,
again, this is not a Malcolm Gladwell hate segment.
I think you might like Jordan Peterson more than you think, my man.
I'd be fucking with it. No, because like Twitter again, Peterson, when you hear Malcolm Gladwell's actual rhetoric on what he's saying, like he knows exactly what he's doing, and he's like, this is thought provoking. This is to get you to think. Jordan Peterson is an idiot that's resting on a credential to say like hate shit and like ridiculous like off the wall shit. But to get back to the point, I don't have a study one way or the other, but like. So I'm purely speaking anecdotally, but like the women in my life are literally the exact opposite. Like the women that raised me. So like one of my sisters makes lists about making lists. Like she's like between the hours of 1 and 2, I need to sit down and list out all of the things on this list to various other lists in one of my 3 planners. Like they're very structured. They're very like, I need to hit boom, 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 boom. That's kind of how you get me.
So is that out of line with variety? Because I feel like women in general are more day planner centric than niggas. That's always been the case.
I think it is. So I think like if that's I'm not saying one way or the other because I honestly have no clue. I think that's why I'm so interested to see the book. Because I don't have any frame of reference for any of this other than like the 20 women I know intricately enough to make an assessment on. But like, I think that if you're one of those women that like is doing that kind of stuff, that is antithetical to variety. Like if you're like, I need to hit all of this shit right here to have a good day. And it's like a structured, planned out hour by hour thing. Then like,
I don't think so.
I think it's antithetical. I get why you can say it's not. Yeah.
Cause I feel like I've what Josh is saying, I can totally like, okay. There are a lot of men, like I can find examples to fit what he's saying. There are a lot of men who are very go along to get along. But most women that I know are much more heavily routinized and structured than most men I know. They're much more likely to have a diary, much more likely to do mood analysis, much more likely to
do sleep analysis.
The women
I'm talking
about,
even playing out dates. They're like Thursday's date night.
And we're doing
this thing. We do this thing first week. We do this thing second thing. We do 100%. This thing third.
However,
thing. We do this
however,
thing fourth, and we do that every month.
Absolutely.
That goes to women's national. That goes to organ. That goes to organization. That goes to organization.
No, for sure. Yes, it is a sense of organization, but those same women are also very much like, let's do date night, but I don't want to do the same place every so often. We need to increase the number of date nights because I'm feeling a little bit. So there's a tendency to use routine as a way of finding variety or remedying boredom. So it's like, okay, cool. What can I do in my routine? Because I'm not getting enough sleep. What can I do in my routine? Because I'm feeling a little bit lethargic. I need to plan a trip. So let's get binders. Let's get an itinerary. Let's do a start. And so let's organize it. Whereas a lot of men will just go, well, I'm just not sleeping so well these days, kind of a thing. And again, I don't know that what this dude in Superior Man is saying is actually true. I would be very curious to see if he's backed it with any actual data, but there's evidence in that routine shit to see. Yeah. Does he use data? Like, or is he just, how does it?
Yeah, he does. Okay. Like, read the book. Like, there's, I'm paraphrasing a good bit of stuff, and it's been like a few years since I've read it. But yeah, just my best advice is the information is out there, and that's one good place to get some non-misogynistic information from a man that, you know, you can take, man or woman, and be in a healthier place.
We're plumb out of non-misogynistic information. We only got the misogyny variety. Misogyny light, if you like, is Pepsi.
And all you get is misogynist. Apparently, all women get and all men get is misogynist shit on the internet, you know? And men get the misandristic shit, so I don't know.
I feel like organization and desire for variety aren't necessarily opposite. They can sometimes be right the fuck on top of each other in the same kind of thing.
I can see that.
Like I do think that
consciousness,
but also a tendency towards boredom.
I do think that what you guys are saying, like for every single thing that you could talk about, I could literally talk about how my sister does something like specifically that's like her planning for a trip is the same trip.
That's very different. Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? Like that, and that's what I'm getting at. Like I'm not going to a different restaurant. Like we go and get a crab boil every Thursday.
Oh, that's like nigga that kind of shit. Yeah, no, you're okay, right. That's very nigga type.
We going to Jamaica. Like, you know, we going to Jamaica this summer because we going to Jamaica every summer.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But that was just basically just me paraphrasing. You know,
is that all 20 women though, or just your sister?
I think my sister is an extreme.
Okay.
Especially that one I'm talking about. I think she's like, I'll say this to her face, so this isn't like a thing. I think it borderlines on some kind of like neuroticism, like exactly how like, boom, 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 like it she is. Needs to be.
Yeah. I respect that shit.
I pick at her about it. Because again, like I get a lot of my same tendencies from her, and we always talk about that shit. Like literally making lists about the list that you need to make is some sociopath shit.
Yeah. Oh my God. Even family. Give this one last moment of clarification. Mm-hmm. It's just about the variety, the difference in variety that men crave versus women crave. That's the ultimate thing. But I'm going to do a shit job of trying to explain that. So I suggest if you are a scholar, if you're willing to actually learn more shit and grow your mind, to read the book. And there's an audio book too. Mm. Ooh, and Eddie, you put me onto a dope ass book. Oh,
Elaine de Botton or?
Nah, bro. Something about love. Yeah. A Course in Love. A Journey of Love. The Journey of Love. The Course of Love?
The Course of Love by Elaine de Botton,
Yes, thank you. Yes, The Course of Love by whatever that author's name is. Eddie, say it again, please.
Elaine de Botton.
Okay, cool. I don't know how to say Elaine de Botton.
Find our personalized Audible link in the description below.
Yes, exactly. Sir. 20% off.
And make sure you enter the code red flag when you purchase. But yeah, those are two
I would definitely recommend that book. It's very good. People have had some criticisms of it, but I think it's a great book. I think it's a great book for just looking at people, because I feel like there's a tendency to look at stuff that's like toxic behavior as just like everybody's evil there. I can't believe they did it. Yeah. But I feel like most people have toxic behavior because that's how we get our needs met, and just being willing to understand like, oh, this person is doing this because they're seeking to be loved, and also understanding yourself like, oh, the reason I'm doing this is for this reason. This is not helpful. This is hurtful to my partner. I understand why, like the emotion that is coming from, but I don't have to translate that into action. And just realizing all the romance of that across a person's life. I really like a lot of Elaine de Botton's work. He does. He's the guy behind the School of Life on YouTube. If you follow.
Oh, shit! Are you serious?
Yeah. So if you know that.
Oh my God, bro! Oh shit! Are you serious?
Yeah, it's the same guy.
The same nigga.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. My mind has literally just been fucking blown.
Does it make sense now, though? Does it see?
Yes, my mind has my mind is fucking blown right now. Yeah,
he's
crazy.
He's good.
Wow. A Course of Love and The Way of the Superior Man. Yes. Great reads if you want to expand your mind beyond the ignorance. Yes, or just, yeah, grow a little bit.
And on that note, if you see people disparaging your legacy just because you had a couple of infidelities, or I don't know, several dozen, you might be seeing a red flag. Oh, if you spew a lot of misogyny on your podcast or in your book that may or may not be Pulitzer Prize winning.
Or if you're stealing shit.
Or if you're stealing shit.
Or if you plagiarize.
Definitely you're waving the red flag. It's been Waving the Red Flag podcast. We'll see y'all next week. Like, subscribe, let us know everything that you think about what we said during the podcast in the comments. And join us on Patreon for additional episodes, as well as if you want to join us on live before every episode. Peace, peace. It's a red flag.